Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
Sunni militants take an Iraqi border town, and an Egyptian court confirms death sentences. I'm Marty Johnson reporting from Washington. Sunni fighters have seized an Iraqi town that borders Syria, allowing the militants to pass freely, along with their weapons, between the two countries. Security officials say fighters with the al-Qaeda breakaway group, the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or ISIL, took the border town of Qaim overnight after a day of heavy fighting on Friday. The Associated Press quotes officials speaking on condition of anonymity, saying people are now crossing back and forth freely. In another development today, fighters loyal to powerful Shiite cleric Muqtada al-Sadr paraded weapons through the streets of Sadr section Baghdad today, vowing to fight ISIL, which is now moving closer to the capital. On Friday, Iraq's top Shiite cleric called for a new effective government that avoids past mistakes, adding to the pressure on the country's Shiite Prime Minister, Nouri al-Maliki. An Egyptian court has confirmed death sentences for 183 people today in a case involving rioting last August in the town of Minya. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The ruling by Judge Saeed Yusuf drew the ire of many human rights activists as well as criticism from the four corners of the globe. The case drew international media attention because many of the sentences appeared to be arbitrary. One police officer died in the clashes around which the trial revolved. Relatives of those condemned screamed and wailed Saturday near the courthouse after learning of the judge's decision to uphold 183 of the death sentences. Relatives of the close to 500 other men who were acquitted, however, appeared to be relieved. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Afghanistan's presidential runoff election is causing controversy this weekend. Hundreds of Afghan demonstrators have flooded Kabul streets in protest of alleged fraud in the runoff. Today's protests were peaceful but disrupted traffic on the main road to the airport. Former Foreign Minister Abdullah Abdullah is accusing electoral officials of trying to rig the runoff in favor of his opponent Ashraf Ghani. The United Nations has assured Afghans today that it is ready to assist in the presidential election if asked to help. Both Abdullah and current President Hamid Karzai have asked for their assistance. Pro-Russian separatists have rejected Ukraine's unilateral ceasefire, continuing the conflict in the country's east that has already killed hundreds. Ukraine's border guard says rebels attacked one of its posts in the Donetsk region overnight, hours after President Petro Poroshenko spoke, announcing a halt in fighting. At least three troops were injured. Russia's foreign minister is backing the separatists, and he is denouncing Ukraine's ceasefire as an ultimatum. Ukraine's government expressed its concerns after Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, put 65,000 troops in central Russia on full combat alert for snap drills. The U.S. has downgraded Thailand, Malaysia, Venezuela, and Gambia to low-level status on its annual report of human trafficking. This action means President Barack Obama has 90 days to decide whether to apply sanctions. Thailand is asking the U.S. to reconsider its placement in the bottom tier of the annual list. VOA correspondent Steve Herman reports from Bangkok.
Thailand is expressing regret and disagreement with the decision by the U.S. State Department to rank it among the countries doing the least to combat trafficking in persons. The permanent secretary of the Thai Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Sihasik Phuketkau, says Thailand does not deserve to be ranked in the bottom tier.
Does that reflect where Thailand stands? Does that provide the kind of support, encouragement for us to continue doing what we've been doing? So I ask the United States whether Thailand should be in that category.
The permanent secretary says the government, which was taken over by the military in a coup a month ago, will ask Washington to reconsider its assessment of Thailand and reevaluate the tangible progress made in the past year. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Pope Francis visited the heartland of one of Italy's most powerful mafia syndicates today, calling for an end to child suffering. He made a one-day trip to the Calabria region and met with the relatives of a three-year-old boy shot and killed in January in a mob hit over money. The Pope's campaign has his own life being threatened. I'm Marty Johnson, reporting from Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. I'm Douglas Mpoh.
And I'm Odette Frazier. Thanks for joining us.
The cries of those who are enslaved around the world today were an earthquake. Then the tremors would be felt in every single nation on every continent simultaneously.
The U.S. State Department releases this year's Trafficking in Persons report.
He's facing two charges. The first one is subverting constitutional government, attempting to commit an act of insurgence, banditry or sabotage, or terrorism. The second count is undermining authority or insulting the president.
And in Zimbabwe, a journalist is charged with banditry, terrorism, and undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe.
I was struck by the deterioration of the political and security situation in the region, notably in Libya, the enduring political and security challenges in Mali, the persistent terrorist attacks throughout the region.
And the UN says crises in Libya, Mali, and Nigeria are destabilizing the broader Sahel region of Africa. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa.
The State Department has released its 2014 Trafficking in Persons report. Secretary of State John Kerry says there is no greater threat to human dignity and no greater assault on human freedom than the evil of human trafficking. VOA's Jody Kapwa reports.
U.S. law defines human trafficking as the act of recruiting, harboring, transporting, providing, or obtaining a person for compelled labor or commercial sex acts, through the use of force, fraud, or coercion. Secretary Kerry unveiled the trafficking report, which monitored nearly 190 countries.
If the cries of those who are enslaved around the world today were an earthquake, then the tremors would be felt in every single nation on every continent simultaneously.
He says human trafficking affects every country in the world, including the United States.
More than 20 million people, a conservative estimate, are victims of human trafficking. And the United States is the first to acknowledge that no government anywhere yet is doing enough. We're trying. Some aren't trying enough. Others are trying hard. And we all need to try harder and do more.
Kerry says trafficking comes in many forms.
Whether it is a young girl trapped in a brothel, or a woman enslaved as a domestic worker, or a boy forced to sell himself on the street, or a man abused on a fishing boat. The victims of these crimes all have names, all had families, and they each have been robbed of the right to lead their lives the way that they might choose to for themselves.
He says wherever the rule of law is weak, where corruption is most ingrained, and where populations cannot count on the protection of law enforcement, there you find zones of vulnerability to trafficking.
But wherever rule of law is strong, where individuals are willing to speak out and governments willing to listen, we find zones of protection against trafficking. And that is what is possible if we double down on dignity, which is what we are doing here today.
The Secretary of State says human trafficking also occurs in the supply chains of the logging, fishing, and mining industries, as well as processing plants.
Exacting profits from exploiting people often go hand in hand in illegal, unsustainable, and unregulated industries. The very things we're trying to fight. From Latin America to Africa to Asia to other parts of the world, there are illegal mining and logging that can create not only environmental degradation, but zones of impunity where trafficking can prey on their victims.
The State Department report lists 23 countries that it says do not comply with the minimum standards to combat trafficking and are making no attempt to do so. They include Central African Republic, the DRC, Eritrea, Libya, Mauritania, Zimbabwe, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and Syria, among others. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
Zimbabwean authorities have charged the editor of a state-owned weekly newspaper with banditry, terrorism, and undermining the authority of President Robert Mugabe. Sebastian Mofo has more for VOA News from Harare.
Edmund Kudzai, the Sunday Mail editor who was arrested Thursday, appeared in court Saturday. State prosecutor Tawanda Zwekare sums up the charges the journalist is facing.
He's facing two charges. The first one is submitting constitutional government, attempting to commit an act of insurgence, banditry or sabotage, or terrorism. The second count is undermining authority or insulting the president.
State prosecutors say the newspaper editor created a Facebook account that he used to reveal government secrets and would refer to President Robert Mugabe as a tyrant or a dictator who stole elections. Kudzai, who faces life in prison if convicted, did not enter a plea to the charges Saturday. He remains in custody and is expected to enter a plea Monday when he makes a bail application. 2 weeks ago, President Robert Mugabe accused Information Minister Jonathan Moyo of appointing former critics of his ZANU-PF party to lead state-owned media organizations. Kudzai was based in the United Kingdom before last year's elections in Zimbabwe. Together with Mududu Matutu, who now edits a sister paper of the Sunday Mail called The Chronicle, Kudzai used to run an online newspaper that was critical of Mr. Mugabe's policies. Zimbabwe has one of Africa's toughest media laws, which has resulted in a crackdown on journalists and shutting down the country's independent media. The government has since indicated that it wants to repeal or amend some of the laws in line with the new constitution enacted last year. After his arrest, Zimbabwe Union of Journalists Secretary General Foster Dongozi told VOA that his organization doubted the sincerity of the government on its promises to repeal media laws. Sebastian Mofu, VOA News, Harare.
An Egyptian court confirmed death sentences for 183 people Saturday in a case involving rioting last August in the town of Minya. Convictions against 496 others were thrown out, while four were given life sentences. Lawyers for those condemned to death say they will appeal. Edward Iranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
The ruling by Judge Saeed Yusuf drew the ire of many human rights activists as well as criticism from the four corners of the globe. Despite the 183 death sentences, it was not clear who, if anyone, would actually be put to death. The case drew international media attention because many of the sentences appeared to be arbitrary. Just one police officer died in the clashes around which the trial revolved. Mohammed Badia, the supreme guide of Egypt's now outlawed Muslim Brotherhood group, had his death sentence confirmed for inciting the crowd to violence. Attorneys for those condemned say that they plan to appeal, and many death sentences in Egypt historically have ultimately been commuted. In a landmark case involving one-time Muslim Brotherhood leader Hassan Hodeibi, a death sentence was commuted to life in prison. Hodeibi was eventually released. Relatives of those condemned screamed and wailed Saturday near the courthouse after learning of the judge's decision to uphold 183 of the death sentences. Relatives of the close to 500 other men who were acquitted, however, appeared to be relieved. One man outside the courthouse said he was not surprised by the verdict since the trial was entirely a political matter. Another appeared to be pleased by the verdict, insisting that justice was carried out. Al Arabiya TV reported that a heavy police and army escort surrounded Judge Yusuf as he left the courthouse. A report in Cairo's Yom Saba newspaper several weeks ago indicated that the judge was being shunned by his neighbors and that the town council had cut power to his house. Veteran Egyptian journalist and human rights activist Hisham Qassem tells VOA that Judge Youssef had brought ridicule to Egypt with his unfair and arbitrary rulings and that he should be removed from the case.
Due process was not observed during any of these trials where mass death sentences were shelled out. And it's continuing. Now, obviously, there's something seriously wrong. This is not a minor error or so. Death sentences do not come en masse. So it's time that there is an administrative intervention from the Ministry of Justice to put an end to this. It is becoming an international farce.
The original trial, in which 683 people were sentenced to death, took place in April. The initial sentences were given to Egypt's Grand Mufti, its top Muslim religious leader, for final review. Saturday's verdict was handed down with the Mufti's approval. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Somali officials say a bombing in the capital has killed a prominent journalist. Police say they believe the bomb was attached to the car of Yusuf Ahmed Abukar, who also used the name Yusuf Kinan. He was on his way to work Saturday when his car exploded in Mogadishu's Hamarawain district. Abukar worked for the private Mogadishu FM station, Mustakbal, and also contributed to the Kenya-based United Nations humanitarian radio service, Ergo. There was no immediate claim of responsibility for the blast that police say was remotely detonated. Mogadishu has been hit by a string of attacks by the country's Al-Qaeda-linked Al-Shabaab rebels, who are fighting to overthrow the war-torn country's fragile, internationally-backed government.
Crises in Libya, Mali and Nigeria are destabilizing the broader Sahel region of Africa. That's according to the UN Secretary General's monthly strategy report on the region. The report focuses on the five core Sahel countries of Burkina Faso, Chad, Mauritania, Mali and Nigeria. The Secretary General's recently appointed envoy for the Sahel, Hirote Gebreselassie, presented the findings to the UN Security Council on Thursday. UN Radio's Jocelyn Sambira has the report.
The Secretary General's report for June highlights that terrorist attacks in the Sahel and the Maghreb, or Northwest Africa, increased 60% in 2013 compared to 2012. In addition, extremist and jihadist ideologies, or Islamic fundamentalism, continue to spread, it says. High levels of youth unemployment in the Sahel increase the appeal of what Ms. Selassie called violent ideology.
In the little time that I have had in office, I was struck by the deterioration of the political and security situation in the region, notably in Libya, the enduring political and security challenges in Mali, the persistent terrorist attacks throughout the region, notably those carried out by Boko Haram in Nigeria, all of which continue to have negative consequences on civilians and local economies.
The UN Integrated Sahel Strategy revolves around three key pillars, notably governance, security, and resilience. The ambassador and permanent representative of Australia to the UN, Gary Quinlan, suggested the strategy be used as a tool for coordination both within the UN and internationally.
It should assist in coherence of action by regional and international actors so time and resources are not wasted. We're encouraged by the growing leadership from the region, including through the Ministerial Coordination Platform, which met in Bamako in May. We welcome UN and African Union support for the platform. We also note the establishment of the Sahel G5 to facilitate coordination between Burkina Faso, Chad, Mali, Mauritania and Niger. Complementarity and synchronization between these initiatives will obviously be vital.
Ambassador Gérard Araud, the permanent representative of France to the UN, told the Council that without security, there can be no development, and vice versa.
Nous saluons l'engagement des partenaires internationaux. We salute the commitment of our international partners. The decision of the BCAH in Rome last year in February to launch a consolidated appeal for the Sahel region of $2 billion over the next 3 years was innovative. It's the first time that such a multi-year approach has been adopted. It will add to other major pledges for Sahel by the World Bank and the European Union. France, a lead donor in the region, has also decided to increase its support to 900 million euros between 2014 and 2015.
Meanwhile, at least 20 million people in the Sahel remain at risk of food insecurity, and 5 million children are at risk of acute malnutrition. Jocelyn Sambira, United Nations.
Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commission earlier this week launched the third National Anti-Corruption Commission strategy for 2014-2018. According to the Anti-Corruption Commissioner, Joseph Fitzgerald Kamara, this new strategy is aimed at promoting integrity and zero tolerance within government institutions. He made this statement while speaking with me on the line from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
What we're looking at now is a greater strengthening of the integrity and building increased trust of the citizens in public governance. Before, there was less integrity right into the institutions. Now we're trying to focus on promoting greater integrity in those institutions, and also we try to promote the zero-tolerance policy in governance landscape. More particularly, we try to concentrate bringing the private sector into the mainstream in fighting corruption, and at the same time, mainstream anti-corruption initiatives into the different government agencies.
You mentioned that asset declaration of government officials should not be seen as a witch hunt. What's the process for asset declaration of government officials in Sierra Leone?
We have the provisions in the Act, the 2008 Anti-Corruption Act, that makes it mandatory for every public servant to annually declare his assets to the Anti-Corruption Commission. The process of declaring an asset is that we have an asset declaration form supplied to each and every public servant for him to complete. And there is a process of completion, and then we have a deadline to submit these asset declaration forms to the Commission. And once they're submitted to the Commission, they're numbered and indexed, and then they're kept confidentially. What the Commission does is that we get to a point where we start doing the verification of this asset. In other words, we try to examine what and what you have declared, and then we conduct a verification test with other agencies of government to identify what are these assets, whether indeed you have them, and how you come to acquire them. When we started the process of the regime of asset declaration in 2008, we were able to collect at least about 17,000 asset declarations from a total of about 50,000. And in the following year, we were able to get up to about 20,000. And then the latest collection, we were able to get 23,000. So we're moving forward. And just this year, we haven't completed yet. We've been able to collect up to 25,000. So we believe that we're making significant progress in terms of compliance. Now, an increased attribute in people giving support to the fight against corruption. And this has been identified in the progressive ratings in the Transparency International Corruption Perception Index. In the last few years, we've been able to make 39 stages upwards from bottom wrong. And we are excited that we're doing a little bit more. And we agree, it has not been well. It is not over, the fight. It's still out there. But we will continue to put pressure on government together with the people that as one, we can overcome the fight.
There have been rumblings and reports of an alleged interest in a third term by President Ernest Bai Koroma, even though that goes against the country's constitution. From the ACC's standpoint, is this something that people should be worried about?
Well, from the ACC standpoint, we've been shying away from making political comments, and I will still insist in shying away from making political comments. But one thing is certain, we stand by constitutionalism. We believe in good governance and believe in what the Constitution says. And we have been reassured by His Excellency the President that he's not going for a third term. And be that as it may, we will monitor the constitutional process to ensure that there's been no interference. And so at this point, there's hardly anything to make any noise about. We only concentrate on what the Constitution says. We stand by what the Constitution says. It has not been changed. And so we're standing back to make a clean watch to ensure that the constitutional review process goes through transparently, then there are issues of accountability embedded in that process, and then everybody will be satisfied. The law is the law. We give support for the law, and we believe in adherence to the rule of law.
If you were outside looking in and you were given a scorecard, how would you score the Anti-Corruption Commission to date?
To date, I would score it with a 65% success rate. Why 65? I think we've done a lot in terms of public awareness and campaign raising, for people to understand what is corruption, what are the issues of corruption, and how corruption affects them as a people. We've also done fairly well in terms of how many convictions we've been able to bring about in the course of the work of the fight against corruption. We've also been able to do a lot of systemic reviews. We've seen enhanced greater accountability within the landscape of governance. For example, at customs, we identify weaknesses in the system that have culminated into a customs act. Now there's increased generation of revenue. Government today can support the making of roads without donor support. Government today can increase its revenue without donor support. Yes, this is the increased generation we're talking about. We feel proud about that. We believe there's more to be done, and we're aspiring to do that.
Sierra Leone's Anti-Corruption Commissioner Joseph Fitzgerald Kamara, he spoke with me from Freetown, Sierra Leone.
Aging always comes with a lot of problems, in particular health issues. But for the majority of Zimbabwe's elderly population, it's double-edged sword. The majority of the country's elderly, struggling with mental issues as they progress in life, have little or nothing in the bank after their savings and pensions were wiped out by dollarization. Now they are calling on the government to look after them as they are struggling to take care of themselves. Iwin Chifera has more from Harare.
Speaking during belated commemorations to mark the United Nations Elder Persons Day, Jonathan Mandaza, chairperson of the Zimbabwe Older Persons Organization, said abuse of the elderly in Zimbabwe is rampant, adding it includes neglect by the government.
Even we within the state, we feel we are being abused. We have lost all our pensions, all our investments, all our savings through dollarization. And yet we are still expected to pay for our medicines. This is serious abuse.
Commissioner Mungate said the government should set up a fund to cater for the elderly, especially after their pensions and savings were wiped out by the dollarization of the country's economy. He says most elderly people, even those who were gainfully employed in their heydays, are unable to look after themselves.
We need at least our society, our communities, and our government to start thinking about compensating the elderly people. Health-wise, we need to be considered there. Security-wise, thieves are entering into our premises, our properties. We cannot fight them. We need security.
Most of the elderly who attended the commemoration said their situation is made worse by the prevailing economic situation where the majority of people are jobless. They said their children, who are now their breadwinners, are mostly out of employment. Annette Maratsirwa tells Studio 7 she wants the elderly to be exempted from paying water and electricity bills.
Well, I think they must help them to pay the rents and to give them health treatment for nothing, and to look after those orphans which the youngsters are dying and leave them alone, because most of the children are dying from this, you know, HIV. So the children are with the grannies, and the grannies are looking after them.
Though the government is obliged to look after the elderly under the new constitution, officials from the public service, labor and social services ministry told parliament early this year that they were hamstrung by budgetary constraints. Despite setting up an old persons board, the government failed to provide funds for today's commemorations and was not represented, as public service, labor and social services minister Nicholas Goche was said to be attending a cabinet meeting. Today's commemorations were organized by the National Aging Network of Zimbabwe, a coalition of civic groups committed to total elimination of all forms of age discrimination. The United Nations set June 15 as World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, a day when people and governments around the world voice their opposition to the abuse and suffering inflicted on older people. The global population of people aged 6 years and older will double from 542 million in 1995 to 1.2 billion in 2025. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Put your flags up in the sky. Hi, this is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. Visit voafootball.com for live updates on the World Cup in Brazil. The site is optimized for your mobile phone or tablet and will bring you the latest scores, stats, photos, and videos. And everything can be shared with your friends from your mobile device to Facebook and Twitter. World Cup nonstop at voafootball.com.
This is The Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa.
And still ahead in the program, the Saturday Music Spot from our collection of music from across the continent, plus Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University, with a commentary.
It's now time for our Saturday Music Spot, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
La femme de mon patron est tombée amoureuse de moi. Elle m'a proposé de devenir son amant. Elle est riche et elle est belle, mais moi je ne veux pas de problème. Son mari c'est mon directeur, moi je suis son chauffeur. Si je deviens l'amant de la femme du patron, c'est dangereux. Diabolique, malgré leur beauté angélique, quand une femme est amoureuse, elle devient très dangereuse. La femme du patron m'a dit si je refuse, elle ira dire à son mari que c'est moi qui lui fais la cour. Même si je suis innocent, j'aurai de gros ennuis. Situation, je ne trouve pas de solution, car dans cette affaire, moi je ne sais plus que faire. Puis dans tous les cas, je n'ai pas tellement le choix. Si je dis oui, c'est imprudent à cause du patron. Mais si je dis non à la femme, elle va se venger. Que faut-il dire? Oh, que faut-il dire? Koutoubouye. Si je dis oui, j'ai peur du patron. Kabakouye. Mais si je dis non, la femme va se venger. Koutoubouye. Ah, quelle affaire! Ah, quelle histoire! Faut-il faire? Que faut-il dire? Si je dis oui, si je dis non. Ah, quelle histoire! Ah, quelle affaire!
Quelle affaire.
Freedom comes to those who fight, but not to those who cry. Cause the more you cry, it's the more your people continue to die. So rise, defend your rights. Yaga, 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 yaga. And poverty be eradicate. And the whole of ghetto youth them be educate. Yo, don't you try to politicize. Don't think me a try to politicize. No, sensitize me a sensitize. And me know say my people must realize the most important things said to live at the beginning in your mindset. To free ghetto people they must educate. But education expensive to get. It's like you say we carry water in a basket. So electricity too high. Yaka, yaka, yaka. Why the price of education is too high. Yaka, yaka, yaka. And to see the tribalism is too much, too much, too much. Kashi kemo da wo medimbe. Amu oza tu sabaka vo meke tu yambe. Opposition ije tu subide tu yambe. Mulira na boba tu kola mu musimbe. Yo, mulikola mu changa be chanze. Abanye girisi babo nanga be chaye. Omunto wa famide yo musabu kumezi. Sakomala wiki chobo la bangamba tutu deku time boom yakala kubalu kilo time boom keri baluka kemugamba kemajimanya time boom ayaga yaga yaga yaga. I don't know why the corruption is too much. Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of electricity too high. Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of education is too high. Yaga yaga yaga. And to see the tribalism is too much. Big up to the leaders, them. The bad news is that everything is wrong. But the good news is that you still can fix it. Alright, chop. Tubakuma somero fizi tuzasulazimu. Na ye emini mujibela javalondemu. Aba bubuka kapisala kwe mulimu. Let me tell you what I want. Obu soso zemu mawanga virunji. Katefena tumanyi techiba shirunji. Yes, take a look in every office. And the change you get a coward, don't you see? So me say, every change you bring you get a kaba singa bibaru mira mori levi sigala yoku mitima. Kulio moya difunye iko opportunity no matter the tribe. Yetu malawo fitina. Antino ye time boom. Ngudo me tuita. Time boom. Embera yo malwa lido. Time boom. Nama somero me tu some se zaba toto bape. Yaga 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 yaga. I don't know why the corruption is too much. Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of electricity too high? Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of education is too high? Yaga yaga yaga. And to see the tribalism is too much. I don't know why the corruption is too much. Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of electricity too high? Yaga yaga yaga. Why the price of education is too high? Yaga yaga yaga. And to see the tribalism is too much. Yaga yaga yaga.
I let you go. Sit down. chiko mukwano numya
Pete ya rusini na yo kidole Nilikupenda ba baby sorry Utapata mwengine don't you worry Patoto tumeza tunawoti yale Tulipanga mina we milele Lakini nini unanichanganya Maisha wote wawili tulipanga Shida ni nyingi hatujapo sana Hainge kuwa hivyo unapenda upendi mpenzi tuwachane na hivyo Unayo hizi sana ninateseka Nali moyoni mimi nauma
I got to go kangende I need to go sitaweza
Nimefumilia sana utaki change na wanome shinba kubadilisha
I got to go kangupowe
I need to go
mukwano
unanio hizi sana Moyoni mimi nauma
I got to go kangende
I need to go
sitaweza
Nimefumilia sana utaki change na wanome shinba kubadilisha
I got to go kangupowe
I need to go
mukwano
unanio Unayependa sana popata lipo Haitwe tabeli Atakula za mutu anakula za kesipo
Nipe changu na mini kupe chako Kamu nipeni hilo nipako We got a lot of issues to settle Pamoja twende mseto Love me baby, I will love you back Scratch my back, I will scratch your back
Not this way unapenda upendi Unani umiza sana, ninateseka Nani moyoni mimi nauma
I got to go, kangende
I need to go,
sitaweza
Nimefumilia sana, utaki change Na wanome shinba kubadilisha
I got to go, kangupowe
I let you go,
mukwano
Unani umiza sana, ninateseka Nani moyoni mimi nauma
I got to go, kangende
I let you go,
sitaweza
Nimefumilia sana, utaki change Na wanome shinba kubadilisha
No, girl, every woman for a man. Love me, I love you, but I not what I want. Girl, here's another tune that missing over a tune, and this one, girl. Girl, never worry about it. Every time you come up, I'm gonna sweet it.
This one, bunny man, I'm music.
La merveille,
trois fois
c'est le
you know you they do me something,
something, something.
Chebi, you know you they make me call. Oh, yeah, suffer, suffer, shake your chingere,
chingere, chingere.
Make I suffer, shake my chongoro. Your love took me by surprise. You can see it in my eyes. And I've come to realize. The fact that I can't deny. Oh my, oh my, oh my. You don't make me lose control. Baby, my cockini. Open the door, show me the way.
Say trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Baby, trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Baby, trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Open the door, show me the way.
Say trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Baby, trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Baby, trikata,
kwari, kwari.
Open the door, show me the way.
Sorry, baby. Chérie, pardon. Sorry, baby.
Chérie, aïe, nous allons essayer.
Nous avons un cas bébé, nous avons beaucoup à chérie. Mais nous avons un peu moins d'enfants.
Your front and behind you, it's fitting for body, oh. It enter my body, oh, baby. Your love took me by surprise. You can see it in my eyes, and I've come to realize it's a fact that I can't deny. Oh my, oh my, oh my. You don't make me lose control, baby. My cagini, open the door, show me the way. I said three kata, why?
Fali, il faut pas du cap, la merveille, trois fois Hassle, and Mr. Love
tonight, love today, simple, complex, complex, simple.
Flavor.
That was our Saturday Music Sport. I hope you enjoyed the music. And now the Saturday commentary by Dr. Suleiman Nyang, Professor of African Studies and Comparative Politics at Howard University here in Washington. Here is Dr. Nyang.
Hello, Africa. It's always a pleasure to share my reflections with the audience of the Voice of America. This week, five issues are likely to be addressed with regard to the post-Obama period. The first issue is AGOA, dead or alive. The other issue is American fingerprints in the field of electricity in Africa. The third issue is the advent of American water companies in Africa. Red, white, and blue, turning green, and the role of Coca-Cola and Pepsi as new water companies in Africa. They used to make money in the past from cola nuts from West Africa to become global Coca-Cola or Pepsi. And if you go to the Olympics or any of these events like FIFA, you might see these levels portraying Coca-Cola or Pepsi as beverage companies worldwide. The fourth issue is American agricultural farms likely to develop in Africa in the post-Obama period. The fifth issue is America and African tourism, the new role for American shipping lines and tourism in Africa. Let me go one by one in the next minutes available. AGOA, dead or alive, is going to be an issue. AGOA, as most people who pay attention to the origins of AGOA and the present situation of AGOA, are wondering whether AGOA will be alive before the summit or will be brought back to existence if the Democratic Party has the majority in the Congress after the election. This is an issue which reporters, members of the Chamber of Commerce that are dealing with Africa, and all people who are interested in Africa's business will be thinking about the life of AGOA in the coming months and in the coming years after 15 years of existence. When we talk about American fingerprints in the field of electricity, I talk about President Obama's commitment to the electrification of Africa. It's a big dream, big ambition, and there are a lot of Africans who are optimistic, pessimists at the same time. So when we talk about American fingerprint in electricity, this is going to be another big issue in the post-Obama period. So as I look at the third issue, the advent of American water companies, if you look at nature and the generosity of nature, Brazil has the Amazon, and Africa has the Congo rivers and many other rivers, and they have served Africa and humanity over the millennia. So when you think about the climate change and all the anxiety of the melting of the Arctic or the Antarctic because of what is going on worldwide, and because of the desperation of pollution of waters, Africa has another opportunity for her people. Water, water, water. DRC could be a $1 trillion enterprise because they have water. All they need is science and technology in the service of business and people. If that could be done, all these people who are going to 7-Eleven in America buying water for $1.49 a bottle will very well be having subsidies, because as Americans began to explore oil beyond America in the Middle East, people were buying gasoline before the 1973 crisis on the Nixon for 28 cents a gallon. Things have changed. Now we're paying almost $4 a gallon with regard to gas. Water is going up. Africa has golden possibilities. And if the American companies can begin to go that way, Coca-Cola and Pepsi might begin to look at Africa in a new light, not for cola nuts as they did at the beginning of the revolution on Coca-Cola and Pepsi. They will now begin to look for water fields in Africa. There are African rivers that are not utilized fully by Africans, and they need science and technology to harness this water. And this could change a relationship with America in a new light. You will now begin to see the rivers and waterways of Africa being mobilized scientifically and technologically. And this is the role of the African immigrants, to begin to think seriously how to develop African-American relations. And this involves all Americans, how they can use Yankee ingenuity in the service of America and Africa in this age of globalization. There is Chinese competition, there is Russian competition, there is European competition, there is Latin American competition. This is where Americans have to look at Africa in a new way. This leads me to the other issue, and that is America and African tourism. Much has not been said about this. Not many Americans go to Africa, except during the days of Teddy Roosevelt, who went to Africa on a safari during the height of British colonialism in Kenya. Not much is talked about American serious engagement with tourism. So when we look at the post-Obama analogy, we see these five issues coming to all those people who are looking at the president and his legacy. As I said again, AGOA, dead or alive, American fingerprints in the field of electricity in Africa. Thirdly, the advent of American water companies are likely to come into being in the post-Obama period. And that's the way it is today when we look at the post-Obama period in Africa.
Thank you, Dr. Nyang.
Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America.
Thanks for spending part of your Saturday with us. I'm Douglas Impoga.
And I'm Odette Fraser. Have a good evening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The key suspect in the deadly 2012 attack on the U.S. diplomatic compound in Benghazi, Libya, has been captured by U.S. special forces. Ahmed Abu Qatala will now face the full weight of the U.S. justice system. The arrest of Ahmed Abu Qatala, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry, is a clear reminder to anyone who seeks to harm the United States that they will be brought to justice. Four Americans were killed on the night of September 11, 2012, when armed assailants attacked the U.S. special mission in Benghazi, Libya. Four American personnel, including Ambassador Christopher Stevens, were killed in the violence. It was the first time since 1979 that a U.S. ambassador was killed in the line of duty. The United States, which captured Qatala unilaterally, continues to work through its embassy in Tripoli with Libya's democratically elected institutions to advance shared interests, including establishing rule of law and stability throughout the country. The United States stood by the Libyan people 3 years ago as they rose up against the tyrant Muammar Gaddafi. The United States continues to support them in their desire to build democratic institutions that will provide them with security, protect their universal rights, and help rebuild their economy. In an official statement, U.S. Secretary of State Kerry said the vision of a peaceful and productive new nation will guide Libya's future, and they have a friend in the United States as they pursue that vision. We will remain vigilant against all acts of terrorism, said President Barack Obama in an official statement. We will also sustain our support for the Libyan people as they work to overcome years of tyranny and do the difficult work of building a democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.